collaborative,
part of the community. It's the next idea. When we really see each other, we want to help each other.
One of the big gaps in Michigan is the gap that exists between people who have homes, who are securely housed, and those who don't. Those who wind up on the streets or in shelters or couch surfing with friends. Our latest contributor to The Next Idea is someone who has experienced the challenges of trying to find secure housing. Lit Kurtz is a former teacher. These days, she works on the streets of downtown Detroit selling the ground cover news. And that has given her some insights into the gap between, as she puts it, first world Michigan and third world Michigan. Lit Kurtz, welcome to The Next Idea.
Thank you, Cynthia.
You have been forced to cope with a lot of challenges as far as finding secure housing. Can you give us a sense of what your situation is right now?
Well, after about 3 years, I am in a space that is not on the street. I have a room with roommates. So the progression of getting back into mainstream housing as I knew it before is underway.
And how long were you on the streets? How long? I mean, you said it's taken about 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I lost my job in 2012. By March 2013, I was literally on the streets. And that's anyone who's living in their car or literally on the streets or even in a hotel. So I've sort of had a combination of those. But I lived in my car for quite some time.
And in your essay, you write about the huge gap between those who are housed and those who don't have secure housing. Give us a sense, what are some of the everyday challenges that people who are housed securely might not begin to realize or begin to understand?
Well, I mean, it's just the everyday needs of having a secure place to sleep at night is one of the most obvious ones. You know, it may sound a little cheesy and hackneyed, but it's the truth. Also, shelter, storage, having a place to place your belongings and not be afraid that they're going to be taken because you put them in some place that's, not as secure.
It's something that hit me in conversations through the years with people who are living on the streets, that the gap between, as you put it, first world Michigan and third world Michigan isn't that big, because it's a very slippery slope when paychecks go away. And I think everyone listening has to stop and go, where would I be? How long would it take if the paycheck stopped before I am unsure of how to keep a roof over my head?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that is a fear that everyone has, and justly so, because we live in a world where no one is really secure. You know, anyone can be downsized or something can happen to your industry. When I went into teaching, I thought I was very secure. And I can remember kind of being smug as a young adult saying, you know, some of these people that have degrees and they're not getting jobs, you know, they should have picked something like teaching. This is something that I have and I will be secure. Never realizing that any industry can be hit. And to see how education, some of the corruption, some of the funding, all of the things that have transpired in education over the past few years could never have been predicted. And I think no one can get too confident in where they are to believe that they cannot be in this very same situation. And even if you have savings, as I did, I had savings, and of course I worked and could get unemployment. But, you know, it's all about timing. And I wasn't able to access my savings in time enough to ensure that I would continue staying where I was. So
it sounds like a lot of moving parts that
yeah,
you're trying to make work.
At one time, exactly. Yeah. And, of course, the stress, you know, my struggle with major depression, too. So that added stress, of course, didn't help in keeping me organized as I needed to be in that critical moment. So, I mean, a lot of things can come together suddenly. You know, homelessness kind of blindsides you because you don't think that's going to happen. You know, I'd been at the place where I stayed for 10 years. So I had no clue, no reason to believe that I wouldn't still be secure in that place.
Your essay for The Next Idea, Lit, you draw on experiences that you've had selling the street newspaper ground cover. Most to the point, the reaction you've seen from children and then from your parents. Can you tell us more about that?
Certainly. I have noticed, and I've actually had the discussion with some of my fellow ground cover vendors, that very often a child will pass, almost invariably in a day, a child will pass by, and I'll say, excuse me, have you seen our street newspaper, the ground cover? And the child will look back with curiosity, and the parent will tug them, pull them away, sort of admonish them, you know. So it's clear that children still have that innocence about seeing people in different situations, different from themselves. And I guess it's a learned behavior to sort of become desensitized. I've sort of picked that up.
Well, you're a teacher, so you know what kind of lessons the little one's getting when mom yanks their hand and pulls them away.
Absolutely.
What is that lesson? What do you think that lesson is?
Well, I like to say you've got to be taught before it's too late, before you're 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You know, you've got to be carefully taught. And I think we make the mistake of giving our students the wrong lessons about life.
And what kind of lessons are those that
that they should be afraid of people who are experiencing homelessness, that we're somehow different, that it could not happen to them, you know, and it sort of plays into all the stereotypes. If you don't mind, I have something in the ground cover I brought with me that I'd like to read.
Sure.
This has never been in one of the issues. We just celebrated International Street Paper Vendor Week. Mm. So this is quite a special issue. And there was a section called A Child's Response to Homelessness. And the student wrote, I do not like seeing homeless people. They are not as lucky as some of us. My family puts away food each night for families that are struggling. My school, Wines Elementary, does lunches with love. Each class makes sandwiches and puts in fruit or snacks and something to drink. Many people are scared of homeless people, but I think there is no reason to be scared because, after all, they are people just like everyone else. So the next time you see a homeless person, help out and make a better community.
Hmm. I know that is what you want to have more of.
Yeah.
And to that point, your next idea is a way that you've come up with that you feel could connect young people to helping and being part of the solution for the homeless population in Michigan. And it's called the CANN Van, C-A-N-N Van. What does CANN stand for?
Well, CANN stands for Creating Another Neighbor's Need, and generally that neighbor is invisible. It's the neighbor that, you know, we say lives in a third world existence right here in Michigan. They live on the fringes. And I was so inspired by Pope Francis when he visited the United States and ultimately gave a speech to the United Nations. He said, in order to enable these real men and women to escape from extreme poverty, we must allow them to be dignified agents of their own destiny.
Hmm.
And I hope the CANN Van Project will play into that.
What is the CANN Van Project? What's the idea?
It is, it's as much of a concept as it is an actual project. The concept being that we will address the needs of people who have been marginalized, that we will reach the needs of the most vulnerable people. And in this case, it would be transportation. Because since I've been out here, I've experienced having to live on nothing but cans and bottles just to survive. I was fortunate, actually, to be in a car. So I was sort of living sort of a hunter-gatherer experience at one time where I could collect enough cans, just enough to keep in my car to run it all night so that I wouldn't be cold. So I wasn't able to move out of a certain radius because of that. And people need cans and bottles for all sorts of needs, from food for someone who's homeless living in a tent who may need to heat their tent in the middle of the night with a propane tank and need, you know, to purchase propane. There are all sorts of needs that, and we move so fast in the first world that we just can't imagine that there is another world, another economy. And that economy needs support because what happens, people end up spending much of their day just collecting cans and walking or riding their bike to redeem them. The buses are not generally accessible because the cans are so bulky. Very often they're leaking.
Yes.
And they attract insects. And most bus drivers are just not willing to let people on the bus, and it's stigmatizing too.
So the idea of the can van is what? Having young people help folks get those cans in to redeem them?
Well, I mean, it has a lot of possibilities. Initially, I think that just letting students get involved in the whole concept that people need to get around in a different manner. I had wanted schools to allow students to collect cans. I started the 100,000 can initiative, is what I wanted to happen, to sort of kick this event off. And the students being aware of why they are participating in this project. So it would be actual a hands-on participation, as well as them understanding that they are working towards purchasing a vehicle that would enable people to move around the city more seamlessly.
Thus the van. So
thus the van, exactly. Yes. I see it as being actually a business in the future with fleet, you know, a complete set of vehicles dedicated solely to serving those who are not served by the general population. But I think the energy of youth would definitely be where we would start collecting the cans to raise money for this.
And I get a sense that there's this hope that if students begin a sustained and a genuine interaction with people who are homeless, that will lessen that fear and anxiety about people living on the street. And what kinds of long-term policy changes do you think that kind of attitude might lead to?
Well, you know, our youth are the future. So I'm hoping that this will set sort of a framework for youth as they grow into adults and begin to take leadership roles in our society, that this will carry on, that these experiences will enable them to make the right decisions as politicians, as business leaders, or whatever area they choose to go into as adults. I'm hoping this will somehow help shape the future, because most of us as adults have become cynical and jaded, and we just can't, even though we try, it takes an effort. I think young minds are still to the point where they can be molded and they don't have to experience all the prejudices that we have, you know, and I just think we need to work towards creating a more authentic exchange between people experiencing homelessness and those who aren't.
Lit Kurtz, who is spearheading an initiative she calls the Can Van Project. So it is a call to action. You can read more about it in her essay, which is on the Next Idea page at michiganradio.org. Lit, thank you so much for being a part of the Next Idea.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Support for the Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.